something went on here, something went on there. And
this time on TNT.
I run into good old-fashioned truck trouble.
We play a new game. Is it Stephen Hawking talking?
And what's up with kids today? All coming up right now on TNT.
Fucking right, eh?
Well, hello there, Jonathan. It's a gosh darn fancy day, isn't it?
Is it?
No.
I don't mean to sound negative, bud, but I'm, if you can't hear it in my voice, I'm in the middle of a bit of a tailspin, and I have to ask you a question.
What?
That comes up with telling this story. Define, when somebody says, right on, how do you interpret that? What does that mean? Generally, right on.
It could be, I remember I picked that as my most Canadian phrase, right on.
Yeah, right and, on.
It can mean anything. It could mean you've been awarded something, or
right
you just hit someone on top of the head and, you know, they're knocked out, like, right on.
So
that's it.
It's true. I would buy both of those uses of the phrase right on as legit.
Yeah.
As you know, I bought this truck business, rollingproductionrentals.com. And as I've said on the show before, I have certain trucks that are too big, not doing enough work, and certain trucks that are little, doing too much. So I have this tractor cab that I wanted to get lengthened. And my plan is to put a new box on the thing. So I get a quote from a guy, say it's $3,000.
Okay.
While he's working on it, he calls and says, "Do you want us to slap some paint on the frame while we're there?" I said, sure. Does that do anything to bottom line? Not really. Long story short, I go to pick it up. It's $6,000 plus HST. So when I say, bud, this is double what we talked about, he goes, right on.
Oh, he hits you with a right on there.
He gave me the right on, which I think is entirely out of context. So this is the thing. There's one example. It's now an epidemic because I went to the registry to get the truck registered so I could get a plate for it. And I have a whole stack of things. Like, I want a transit permit for the cube van that I'm going to take parts off, but it has to go to PEI to get done, all this stuff. The woman's not able to help me with any of it because I have to have a structural engineer look at the new truck and say whether it's, in fact, been done properly. And when she says, is there anything else I can help you with, even though she hasn't really helped me with anything, and I say, not really, she says, right on.
Are you serious?
Yes, it's an epidemic. The last day with stuff related to this truck, I called over to where I'm taking the truck to say I wasn't going to be able to make it today because the truck won't start. That's a whole other story. It was a fuse. I've been on the side of a dirt road for 24 hours. I say, won't start. I'm having trouble getting it registered. I need a plate for it, so I'm not going to be able to make it. He goes, right on.
No. See, both of they all sound like that's what you would say if they were listening to somebody else. Like you said, perfect. Thank you very much. You get really everything worked out.
Well, I'm not a confrontational person, and when something like that happens where it was really, especially with the quote, it was a verbal quote, we went over it a couple of times, it's kind of a he said, but ultimately, he kind of has you over the barrel, because he has your truck, he's not giving it to you till you pay, so the very least you can hope for as a consumer is that he knows you're not happy with it, and you're really making an uncomfortable exchange. That's your best possible thing, which not only doesn't feel good, but it doesn't get you anything. So that's why he just put on his Teflon nothing sticks ears and just right on his way out of it.
So nothing changed?
No.
No,
I paid the thing, and I drove the truck for 3 minutes, and it didn't even make it home because the power died. Right on. I'm going to tell you something, though. I'm going to start using it when people have problems with me, because it's confounding.
No, but you're kind of blindsided by it to the point where you're like, what do you say to that?
Well, so I said, no part of this is right on.
Oh, no.
And he said, well, hopefully, you know, this will help increase the value of your truck. And I said, let's be perfectly clear. This is money I'll never see again. This is money I might as well have burnt it in an incense burner.
Oh, man. man.
Right on.
And he hits you with another one?
Oh, yeah, he hit me with a couple. Maybe three. Like, right on was just his finger in the ears, listening phrase.
I think in his mind, it's like a political, like, I heard what you said. We're going to pass it by the people that be, and we're going to think about that. Like, that's his version of right on.
The drag was the dudes that work there, who probably did most of the work, were on their break when I got there, and it's a small place, and they probably know that I'm J-Rock or whatever. Yeah. And when he went back to the guys, they were like, so what do you think of the truck? And to be perfectly honest, the work is great. Even the paint job is beautiful. The truck looks incredible. It's just not what we talked about. And I said that to him too. Like, I have no doubt it cost what you're saying it cost. But at no point in the process did you think, I should maybe give this guy a call and see if we ran into a bit of trouble. Is it okay if we keep going? Because generally, you're supposed to do that, aren't you?
Yeah. No. Well, you're supposed to tell people what's about to happen, and it will cost this, and they give you the opportunity to, because I mean, if they have to buy some part that you never thought, there's other ways of doing that if it's very expensive, like finding it yourself or whatever. I mean, that's totally like you getting ripped off. That's classic con stuff.
Well, when you give somebody a quote, you kind of have to stick to it or advise them otherwise. The truth is, I had similar quotes, not in my neighborhood, but chose to spend the money here. Because my father-in-law always says, and he's right, in our blue-collar, modest town, try to spend the money here if you can before you go to the city. And he's absolutely right. And that's what I tried to do. So he owes me $3,000, is how I see it, my father-in-law.
Yeah, that's a lot of dinners.
Right on.
And wine.
There you go. I feel like I've lanced the boil of tension. But I feel like, and I felt this when I lived in the United States too, and I got a social security number and I paid taxes and I really tried to do it right. It's so much harder than it is to just be the greasitarian under the radar.
Like, no, I know.
When I went to the reg to get this thing plated, I offered that I'd had the chassis lengthened and they were like, oh, hold the wedding. We can't, whoa, what the, whoa. So suddenly it's a thing. Now it's a thing.
Oh, man.
And it would be better if you just lie, but it's not my nature.
Oh, what a day you've had.
What a day I've had, bud. What's going on with you?
Well, I was up late last night. I was at, do you like the Death from Above 1979? They're a wonderful rock combo.
Where were they playing now?
They played last Friday at the Sound Academy, and I saw the show, but they were screening their documentary. Sebastian's wife Eva directed this wonderful doc called Life After Death from Above 1979, and I saw it last night at the Royal Theater on College Street, and it was a fine gathering of people, and it was cool to see a loud kind of rockumentary, if you will, in a theater with people, and it was like actually the music was loud and great.
So fun.
It was fun.
Now, when you see things like that are awesome, do they inspire you and think, I should do something like that? Or do they make you, in a way, shut it down and think, oh, man, I could never make anything that good?
No, I just enjoyed it for, like, because, I mean, I guess, you know, it was basically about the fact that they did break up after 4 or 5 years and then got back together again. So there was just the element of what happened and the insular vibe of the broke up feeling at, you know, towards the breakup era. There's an element of that, but I think watching it was just fun. I didn't feel like anything other than just enjoyment, and no different than going to any other movie. Being a musician, you just kind of appreciate it because you feel for a lot of the situations and the perspectives, but in terms of wanting to do anything? No, I just respect those guys a lot and enjoyed it. I did go out afterwards stupidly because I had to get up at 7 o'clock to help Lisa get the kids to school. But I was up till, I don't know, 3 o'clock with the Darcys, another fine Canadian rock combo.
Yeah, but kids are so understanding when you've been up late, aren't they?
They were, you know what? I mean, they are. They're fine. They're happy in the morning. So it was kind of just get up and hope you might get some sleep at some point. I don't think that's going to happen, though, seeing as it's 1 o'clock and I have to get them in an hour and a half.
Right.
But it's been an epic night of laughs. So it's worth it. Always worth it for the laughs.
Let me ask you, bud. Speaking of music and stuff, it's been quite a year of change for you. Not to pry, but how are you feeling about all that?
I'm feeling great. It's different. I guess joining the band at 17, basically in high school into that, and not really kind of growing up in it, and this past spring leaving that and just kind of being with my family and kids and living life and not picking up and leaving at any given time and having a schedule and keeping it. It's been really interesting and probably not a big deal for most people that are in a normal routine. But for me, it's just been opening on many levels and kind of like a rebirth in a way. It's been really cool.
Well, is it like any breakup in the way that at first you're like, oh, that's not what I imagined, or I didn't expect things would go down like this, but then you have a moment where you realize, wait a minute, I can eat whatever I want and watch whatever I want on TV and go out wherever I want, and I don't have to share in these decisions with anybody? Are you at that wide-eyed, it's a new day, I can do whatever I want stage yet?
I've been like that for a long time, just the enjoyment of the possibilities of anything, and that's definitely been the trip. In terms of what I'm doing and what I'm going to do every day, that's the only thing that's been different. It's just there's so many different things that I am doing. It's hard to kind of gauge how I'm gonna continue the juggling without one of them getting bigger than the others, because there's so many things that are really important, and I'm trying to maintain all of them, yet at any point one of them could kind of take over time of the others. So I just kind of keep busy, but I'm also maintaining all of these little different things and big different things, and keeping perspective on all of that stuff. And because they're different lines of life, work stuff, I mean, anything from performing in bands to speaking in microphones for money, and different ways of speaking speaking and giving opinion to, using your voice, voiceover work and stuff. So there's all kinds of weird stuff.
Well, it's one of my favorite expressions: when nothing is for sure, anything is possible. And
well, yeah,
it's really exciting.
It's more, I think, because when you start to get into all these different lines of work and business, you get to know all of these great people that are in these things, and it's just it's very Littlest Hobo-esque, because you're kind of going from group to group, and it's all loving and amazing. But eventually I'm worried that I'm going to have to say goodbye to one of them, or you know what I mean?
Well, it's like the thing with our podcast. I mean, we'd love to be able to get them out on a more regular basis, but life gets in the way sometimes. And I know it's a priority for both of us, but it's at this point a hobby versus a gig. Although, breaking news. Do you want to tell the people the breaking news?
We have breaking news. Tigard and Torrens is hitting the airwaves. We are coming to TSN 1050 on December 29th and 30th of 2014. From the hours of 9 to 11 o'clock, taking over for the great Matthew Cause and Bob Makowitz. Mako and Cause.
Very exciting.
Filling in. Yes.
Very exciting. Big shoes to fill. They're nice dudes, and they're awfully kind to scooch over for a couple of days and let us get in there.
Yes.
But we have planning to do. Like, suddenly, I don't know how much about the process folks know about putting together our podcast. Here's what it requires and involves. One of us calling the other one 5 minutes before we turn the mic on, and saying, yes, what do you want to do? But suddenly, yes, if we're doing an actual radio show on the actual radio involving actual callers and actual games.
And actual segments and actual people concerning and jobs at stake.
Then we actually better
have to do it. Yep. Yes. And let's be honest. I mean, if this show had a budget and we had a place and all of those things, and we could actually had someone to pay to make sure things happened on a weekly basis, we would, and we would have, if we had more time, we would do these things. And that's why here's an actual opportunity for us to do something in the literal sense of broadcasting. So we're going to treat it as such, and we're looking forward to having some amazing segments and games, some of the games that we play on TNT.
And I love that. And one of the philosophies I have about life is that you don't want to get to the end. Someone said once, and I forget who, when you get to the end of your life, you don't remember the things you tried and failed. You'll remember the things you always wanted to try but never did. And I learned this in a grand way in the past week, because I was at an outdoor show a couple months ago with my father-in-law. And we met six women who are the only all-female Canadian chapter of the Canadian Wild Turkey Federation. They're all hunters. But there are a couple of things that are interesting about it. One is they have day jobs like accountant and airline administrative person, things like that. And the second thing is the reason they hunt is because they like to know what they're putting on their family's tables. So
for food.
Almost like clean eating, semi-organic kind of thing. They say you don't know what you get at grocery stores, but when I put a deer steak on my kid's table, I know there's only one set of hands that's touched it. So I said, I feel like this is a TV show. And they said, well, we feel like it might be too. I just love the fact that they were open enough and into it enough to roll the dice on something, because as we both know, you never know what's coming from where. And just the amount that you get back from the universe by just being open to stuff is so cool.
Well, and working and continually trying things, that's the key too. Yeah. Not to sit and wait for the door to ring or the phone to knock.
Right. If you're waiting for the phone to knock, you're going to be waiting a long time.
So the you actually are perhaps putting together a pilot?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And they're, the neat thing is, I think at their core, they are women who've made enormous sacrifices for their husbands and for their kids. And this is something that they're doing for themselves. So one of the things you can't fake in a reality show is authenticity as far as chemistry. This group is really important to each of them. They really get along really well. So, I reached out to a friend of mine who has a production company in LA, and they came up to, we shot a casting tape first, and based on the strength of the casting tape, they came up to shoot a full kind of pilot.
Sweet. And you're just like hanging out.
Yeah, just hanging out.
Are you on the show, or are you like with them, or are you just producing?
Just producing and directing.
Nice. Yeah. That's really cool.
Have you ever hunted, bud?
No, I haven't. But Lisa's family, being from the Ottawa Valley, they would always hunt for the winter. So,
well, yeah, I haven't. I think sport trophy hunting is different than we're hunting, because we live in a part of the world where we're going to eat every morsel, and it's happened here for hundreds of years, and we're feeding our families. Like that I can get behind.
Totally. I hear the same thing. Like the idea of just catching something to put on your wall is just beyond, I just don't understand that. I mean, you're shooting it with a gun. It's not like you beat it up with your bare hands, you know?
Right. Though I remember hearing an interview from New Brunswick, probably 10 or so years ago, this guy was driving a gold Isuzu Trooper down a logging road, and hunters who were wasted shot at him because they thought he was a deer, and they took out his eye. And as you can imagine, he'd be like, I just don't understand. Imagine how pissed off you'd be if you lost an eye driving your gold Isuzu Trooper. I mean, you're driving an Isuzu Trooper to begin with.
That's what Wheels' dad drove in Degrassi. Yeah, he had the little Suzuki.
The Samurai?
Jeep thingy. Yeah, right?
Well, let's not confuse the Isuzu Trooper and the Suzuki Samurai, because the Samurai was the Jeep version, right?
But I mean, they're not, they're similar size. Oh, yeah, they're
totally similar. And similar I would in, like to, in vintage.
I would like to think that I would see, you know, the possibility of that type of person down a, driving down a logging road in a Suzuki as well. It's just,
I don't know if you'd make it down a logging road in a Suzuki Samurai. My friend Al had one, and it was a curse to get in the back seat of that thing to drive into Charlottetown from Cavendish. I'll tell you that.
How does Wheels' dad get his drums around in that thing, I wonder?
Was Wheels' dad bad, a drummer?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a bad, some bad, what do they call that in the film when the just doesn't add up to the character?
Right.
He should be able to get like a, some drums in that thing.
Right, that doesn't, you have to suspend disbelief.
Yes.
Although it was the 80s, maybe he had those little electric drums. Juga,
no, no, because he goes and sees him, and he sees the band, remember, and he touches the bass, and he gets upset.
Was Don't Wheels touch in
bass,
Zit Remedy?
The bass player. Poor Wheels.
Wheels was in Zit Remedy, right?
Yes.
So he came by his musical chops. Honestly, was Wheels the drummer? Yes.
I think he played bass.
Did he?
Yeah, he played bass because that's why he picked up the bass when he was going to see the Drifters.
The apple didn't fall far from the drunk-ass tree.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm really excited about the game we're going to play today. Should we take a break and get into it?
We are going to be playing... Is it Hawking Talking?
Hawking Talking. It rhymes, which the people love. It also involves technology, which the people love.
And it's Stephen Hawking is Hawking Talking.
Amazing. You're listening to Tagger and Torn, soon to be heard... On TSN, what is it, 1050?
Yes, TSN 1050 in Toronto.
For 2 days only, thanks to Macko and Cause. We're going to take a break. Hold on.
Cocktail, please.
Hey, hey, hey.
Welcome back to Taggart and Torrance. So Stephen Hawking was in the news in the last couple of weeks.
Yes.
Why? Science fiction is, I want to get behind it, and I want to understand it, and I know that it's important, but it's kind of not my bag.
Well, he's concerned about artificial intelligence being getting too smart, and you know the device that he speaks on, it's an Intel created thing that I guess it reads his brain and nerve waves or patterns of speech, and he says it's pretty bang on to what he thinks, and it speaks what he's kind of thinking.
Nerve waves.
When he does speak, it compounds and understands his language and thoughts, and it starts to build upon them. Not unlike that movie Her with Joaquin Phoenix and Scarlett Johansson,
right?
Where you get into a program and it starts to compound itself and learn and get an idea. So he's saying that this is happening, and it's working so quickly, and everything doubles every year, and his concern is eventually the computers and robots or whatever else will think to themselves and will be way more intelligent. And in conversation, you'll be able to think whatever you want. You'll have Wikipedia in your head. You know, it'll be your personality won't matter as much because everybody will know what you know, and anything that's cool will be known, and there's no way of kind of being different if it's all about information and memory. You know what I mean?
Or mysterious or coy. Did Joaquin Phoenix pound that computer, by the way?
What's that?
Did Joaquin Phoenix pound that computer lady?
I don't know. I think he probably did.
Yeah.
I think he did.
He tried.
Yeah. Well, it dumped him, though. That's what's even funnier.
The
Remember
computer
that?
Dumped him. Well, I mean, are people with artificial intelligence are computer heads going to want to pound?
Well, I'm sure. Do you mean like the robots?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think they would probably just do it in terms of status to kind of the idea of what it is and the hierarchy of humans and how sex is kind of part of that in a way. You know what I mean?
Like they'd know what it was on paper.
Yes. So let's play Hawking or what is it again? Is it Hawking Talking?
What if it's Look Who's Hawking?
Oh my gosh. No, it's Hawking. Is that Hawking Talking?
That's the game. So you're going to play a clip, and I have to guess if it's Stephen Hawking or your computer. And how did you make this voice?
Well, it's basically it's using the same kind of voice that he has anyway. So right. It's actual quotes from Stephen Hawking, or I made it up.
Okay.
Okay?
So is that Hawking
you
talking?
You have to guess.
Yes or no? Okay.
Yes.
All right,
yes.
Hit me with the first one.
Okay, here's the first one. Okay, here we go.
People won't have time for you if you are always angry or complaining.
Did you hear that? You want to hear it again?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
People won't have time for you if you are always angry or complaining.
Hawking talking?
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No, I think you did that.
No, that was Hawking talking.
Really?
Right there. Yes.
It's so hard.
No, it's not. Not when you hear
all right,
ones
so,
that aren't. Okay, you ready for the next one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Here we go. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. This is good, this game. Okay, hang on. This is a great game. You ready for this?
Yeah, him.
Okay, here we go.
Look up at the stars and not down at your feet. Try to make sense of what you see and wonder about what makes the universe exist. Be curious.
Can I hear it again?
Sure. Let me just dial that up for you, bud.
Look up at the stars and not down at your feet. Try to make sense of what you see and wonder about what makes the universe exist. Be curious.
Be curious.
Well, it sounds like something Hawking would say, and it sounded believable. I'm going to say Hawking.
All right. It was Hawking.
Hawking,
that's
nice.
Hawking talking.
I'm one for two.
Yeah, you're one for two. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
Bill Cosby played himself. I never thought of him as a sleep creeper. He is so fucked.
Do you want to hear that again?
Yeah.
Okay.
Bill Cosby played himself. I never thought of him as a sleep creeper. He is so fucked.
I'm going to guess that's not Hawking.
Good one. Oh. Yes, you got it. You got it.
He played himself. We should do a whole episode in our robot voices.
Yeah, I know. You ready for this one?
Yeah.
Okay.
However difficult life may seem, there is always something you can do and succeed at.
It almost sounded like he had an East Coast accent.
Oh, really?
Yeah, something you can succeed at.
Yeah, oh my God.
Hit it again.
Let's hear that again.
However difficult life may seem, there is always something you can do and succeed at.
It's the something. It's the no G at the end of something.
Yeah.
I think that's you.
Sure. No, that's Hawking.
Come on.
That's Hawking talking.
That's Hawking talking.
Okay, you ready?
I am doing really badly.
Yeah, you are. You ready for this one?
Yeah, hit me.
Okay.
What's up with the greasy-looking latex rubber gloves in parking lots and alleyways all over the world?
Hear that again?
Yeah.
Hear it again, okay.
What's up with the greasy-looking latex rubber gloves in parking lots and alleyways all over the world?
Oh my gosh, that's funny. That's gotta be you.
Yes. What's up with the greasy-looking latex rubber gloves?
I love hearing words like greasy and expressions like played himself in this voice. It's so funny.
Oh, that's good. Okay.
I keep thinking you're going to throw me for a loop, though.
You ready?
Yeah.
I believe alien life is quite common in the universe, although intelligent life is less so. Some say it has yet to appear on planet Earth.
Well, so far, if the pattern continues, that's got to be Hawking.
That is Hawking. Good job.
So what are you playing, interview clips of him?
They're just quotes. These are quotes from actual Stephen Hawking quotes.
Oh, my gosh. But is that actually Stephen Hawking's voice? Or is that put through your computer
program? No, but it's similar.
Right, got it.
Yeah, this is this. Yeah, that's why they're both the same.
Oh my gosh, it's so good. Do you have another one for me, bud?
Yeah, you ready?
Yes.
Okay, here we go.
Why does Bono talk so much? I can't handle the new U2 record. What's happened to them? They were cool. Now they are so fucking cheesy.
His inflection is amazing. Play it again.
Okay. This would be,
Why does Bono talk so much? I can't handle the new U2 record. What's happened to them? They were cool. Now they are so fucking cheesy.
Amazing. I mean, that even sounds like you. That's gotta be you.
Okay, so obviously you know that's,
Oh my gosh, that's fun. That's a really fun game. Hey, the woman who is Siri is now my friend on the Twitter.
Oh, really?
Yeah, have you ever heard her interviewed?
No.
It's so crazy, because they got her to record whatever, 200,000 words or something nuts, and she didn't even really know why, because the technology would be so top secret, right? And then she got a notification through her management, by the way, this is what we ended up doing with your voice, and you are Siri.
Crazy.
Crazy. I love
this. Ready for another one? Talking.
There's more. Yeah, hit me.
Oh, yeah, here. Okay, here we go.
People won't have time for you if you are always angry or complaining.
Didn't we do that one?
Did we? Maybe we did.
Yeah, I feel like we did. I feel like that was the first one. In which case, it's talking.
How about this one?
We gotta get off this rock. Bill Gates scored me a seat on the Monsanto rocket. See you later, suckers.
Now that one's like tough.
You want to hear that again?
Yes.
We gotta get off this rock. Bill Gates scored me a seat on the Monsanto rocket. See you later, suckers.
We gotta get off this rock. Bill Gates scored me a seat on the Monsanto rocket. See you later, suckers.
Wait, was that you reading it back, or that was the robot?
That was the actual, what he just read.
But who just said it now?
That was me.
Oh.
But I'm saying, you're clearly knowing that's not really Stephen Hawking.
That's not really Hawking talking, no.
No, but it's a good one.
It's a really good one, because it was sort of about outer space.
Yes.
And that's why it did give me pause for a second. I had to hear it a second time.
Do you want to hear it again?
You know what we should do is make the board game. Like, how do we make this a board game?
A board game?
Wouldn't you sit around and play as Hawking talking?
It's interesting because, like, on paper, it's so obvious. But, like, when you hear it, it's like,
it's so great.
Yeah.
All right, hit me.
That was it. What? That's it.
Bud, you did a great job.
Thanks,
having to make those up from scratch. I don't even know, what is the program that you use to do that?
I just did them up from the notes on the MacBook, just pressing the edit speech button or whatever.
That's so wicked.
Yeah, it's a good game.
It's also a good way to leave an outgoing voicemail message.
Oh yeah,
right.
For
you
sure.
have reached yep. Jonathan. I think.
Which you think has probably been done a lot, if you think about it.
I guess
it's that
so.
Easy.
Maybe next time we should take it up a notch, and you have to guess whether it's you or that robot voice. Like let's really work on our robot voices and see if I can throw you.
I could actually record them and then play them. That would be funny.
Really funny.
We gotta get off this rock. Like that.
Let's take a tiny break.
And be right back with TNT.
Don't you dare go away.
Come back, will ya?
And we're back, and we're going to be talking about shopping. I'm about to do some shopping today with the kids.
How do you it in your house? Does everybody buy something for everybody, or do you have a limit, or do you draw names, or how do you do it?
Well, you know how kids are. They get so hopped up for Christmas. They just got to have... this stuff, and there's certain things where you know if they're really adamant and it's not like not something that's stupid, it's hard not to say yes. And if it's not too expensive, obviously, but then they'll ask Santa for expensive stuff. So it's weird. You got to go through the levels of what you can get. And I'd say there's probably at least two or three things that the kids want to have each that, you know, aren't super expensive, but are very important to them.
Like what?
Like my daughter, like she's told everybody in the family that she wants a yo-yo. And it's like, you have to get me a yo-yo, and you have to get me a yo-yo, and you, like everybody. And she's, you know, she's four. She probably won't be able to figure it out, but it's just, she has to have a yo-yo. It's like an obsession.
Where did yo-yo come from, I wonder?
I don't know, but I love it. I think it's great. I love that it's old school and just classic.
Hand-eye coordination stuff?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just, she just wants a yo-yo, and my sons are, she doesn't have depth with her gift. She just wants yo-yos from everybody. But John and Jack have like absolute depth. Like it goes from a computer down to, you know, an iPod or, you know, I guess whatever the iPod Touch would be for kids to video game crap and trashies. You heard of the trashies?
Have no.
You heard of those?
What are
That's
those?
That's the thing that you go to Toys R Us and it's just these rubber things that you collect, just like everything else.
Who's getting punched in the neck they're over always what at a Toys R Us this year? Is it the trashies? Is that this year's
no,
Cabbage
I don't think
Patch
it,
Kid?
I don't think so. I don't know if there's a
who's
there's
getting
a
choked
burning
out?
Hot. Usually it's like probably the PlayStations or something like that. Isn't there like a new PS4 or something like that coming out?
I don't
out?
Know.
Or, you know, people are already killing themselves for iPhone 6s probably.
One of the things in our house is we, I started this thing where the girls have to give away 10 toys every year at Christmas in case Santa Claus comes and they need to make room for any new toys that Santa Claus might bring. So there's been as much talk about the list of what to give away.
Yeah.
As there has been the list of what they want, but mostly it's like kind of bartering. Like, do you think this one doll shoe that I lost the other one for, like, does that count as a giving away a toy?
Nice.
Like kind of defining what counts, what if the minimum possible is to give away. But I admire that.
Yeah. Yep. It's like a half gift. So that means two half things or one.
The kids today are entitled a little bit, aren't they? The bar is really high.
Well, I mean, the marketing is so direct and, like, perfect that they just know what they want. And they, you know, have a good idea for it. And they develop the stupid passions in these commercials to make kids think that these things are important. And a lot of the time they just get them and then they go home and they can't wait for the next thing. And there's just nothing we can do about it. We can try as much as possible to make them not affected by media and commercials, but it's just that happens. And, you know, just try not to make it too expensive or try not to make them get crazy about it and not get, you know, I think it's, you can buy them something and it's up to the parent to engage with the kid with that thing or whatever it is to try and, because that's all kids want is attention at the end of the day. And if you buy a present to keep them quiet and you get used to that, then they get used to that. You know what I mean? They get used to you fulfilling them with stuff to be occupied while you can do other things. So you just have to, I guess, keep the communication going because kids want to hang out. But if you get them used to stuff, then they'll do that just as much.
Did I ever tell you about The Kids Are in Charge, the show that I did on the Travel Channel in the States?
I don't know if you did, but
you take a family away on vacation. Mostly these were have-not families.
Yeah.
Say a family of five, you take them away on vacation, and the kids make every decision about what they eat, what activities they do. They had to pick a romantic activity for their parents, which, as you can imagine, was more often than not air-to-air combat lessons or something not romantic at all.
Yeah.
But my point is they got to charter planes to land in the Grand Canyon, and they got to zip line down the side of an active volcano in Hawaii. They got to do some really cool stuff. But
yeah.
Without exception, at the end of every episode, when you'd say to the kids during the interview, what was your favorite part of the week? I got to play in the pool with my dad for 2 hours.
Yeah.
They just want time, dude. They just want to hang.
Yeah.
And it's really neat.
And it's hard for us as parents to fight modern technology, too, to engage and just hang out and try and spend as much time with them, because it's fulfilling for us and we don't even realize it, you know?
It is. And the weird thing is, like, shows for kids have come so far because there often is an educational component. So you can kind of get behind, well, they're actually learning something watching this. My 5-year-old daughter right now is super into Play-Doh videos. There are videos on YouTube where somebody who's an adult, like, you just see their hands and they're like, hi guys, I bought this Play-Doh at the secondhand store. I'm going to give you some dolls for you to see again.
I know those videos, man. They're always these guys with the big weird voices.
13 million views. Or like a dude who's like, all right, guys, I got the Elsa and Anna from Frozen. Gonna make them some dresses out of Play-Doh. Get a hobby.
Well, I know. But then they're making money on YouTube doing that dumb shit.
How?
Because the views, if they have a YouTube channel and they're getting like, I think it's like if you get, I don't know if it, a million views is $1,000 or something stupid like that, you know. And if you can get 10 million views or something, you're actually making money from the advertising that you're creating by those views.
Well, this is the thing. The Play-Doh ones, at least they're making a thing. Have you seen the Kinder Surprise ones? Okay, guys, no, my name's Darren. I'm in Akron, Ohio. I just bought 24 Kinder Surprises, and I'm going to open them up for you.
Yeah.
And it's a 17-minute video of a dude's hands opening Kinder Surprise.
Yeah.
37 million views.
Yeah, my favorite is the ones where it's like the walkthroughs. My kids will look at the games that they'll play like it for a walkthrough for like Minecraft or something, and it's like some 30-year-old guy, and he's like, okay, I'm gonna show you how to make rocks and break it down into the mine so we can... And it's like, and then all of a sudden this, like, his friend comes on and they're just like talking and then they start making jokes and you're like, this is their life. And then you get a feel and it's like you look down and there's like 480,000 views.
We should start like, a series of videos anyway, on YouTube.
Anyway, dude, that comment that someone made last week wasn't very funny. You know, there was like start going on about that. Like, it's really... too much,
and
man.
I just think you're super clever, but, you know, it's really hurtful when you say those things.
You're blacking out the haters.
We should start a series of videos on YouTube about reading books. And we just open a book a page at a time on video, float them on YouTube, and see if anyone goes for it.
Well, no, they
hey
don't.
Hey, guys, my name's Daryl. I just bought this book. It's called To Kill a Mockingbird. Here's how it works. Pages are numbered. Start at page one. Finish when you get to the last page, guys. Good luck.
Like, remember Andy Kaufman did that live? He like read from a book, and like people were just like, "Are you kidding me?
You gotta be kidding me!"
Yeah, and, like the one guy who stayed, he just like finished the book and left.
Because a friend of mine has a theory that if you count backwards from 50, people will stick around just to see what happens.
Yeah, well.
I'm going to tell you something, bud. It's the 25th anniversary-ish of Street Sense. And in many ways, I think a show like that could thrive maybe more now than it did at that time. Because there are so many more choices for young consumers nowadays. And the thing that I liked about Street Sense is it was kind of the start of the wave of infotainment. It didn't speak down to the viewers. It just said, you can pay $130 for those Reeboks if you want. But just so you know, they cost $10 a pair to make. The other $120 is going into Shaq's pocket.
Yeah. No, that's a show that needs to be put out there, but the corporations don't like those shows.
No, they don't.
No, they do not. And well, did you guys ever have like complaints from companies?
Well, we didn't have commercials in the body of the show. which was very
no,
important.
But if you said like this shampoo sucks and you throw it in the pit, like do you ever have like complaints from those people?
Not that I can recall. Because I don't think we threw anything in the pit that really didn't deserve it. Although I just did an interview for Vice. Somebody's doing an oral history of Street Sense. And Mike Clattenburg reminded me that we always said on Street Sense, when we threw something in the pit, it's fit for the pit and throw it in. Yeah. And when Mike Clattenburg arrived there, he'd been working at Halifax Cable. And he had a show called That Damn Cable Show. And I was a big fan of Mike Clattenburg's when he arrived there because his sense of humor was great.
Yeah.
And when he arrived there, he started doing things like shaking it up so that you wouldn't say it's fit for the pit and throw it in the pit. You'd say stuff like, eyes all over to one side, this is whack, and throw it in the pit. And I remember the producers kind of had a real problem with it at the time because he was so into breaking format. His sense of humor is so unique and weird. And it comes from his dad. For those who don't know, Mike Clattenburg's the guy that created Trailer Park Boys. And his dad, Kenny, who's not with us anymore, was a drummer in the Dutch Mason band. Really funny guy in his own right. So Mike would be away studying radio and television arts for the winter. And he'd come back to Dartmouth in the summer. And everywhere he went, people would be like, so working for Ben's, are you? Driving a Ben's bread truck? How's it going with Ben's, Mike? Mike, I heard you got on at Ben's bread. That's good for you.
Telling everybody in town.
What the hell? Kenny was telling the whole everybody, winter telling everybody. Right? Yeah. Where's Mike? Oh, he's down the valley working for Ben's.
Oh, my God.
And the thing I love about a joke like that is you're not even around to see the payoff, but you just plant seeds of funny all winter.
Oh, my God.
And let them get harvested by confusion all spring.
So Mike's walking around town and it's like, how's Ben's?
Yeah. Doing hot dog buns, are you, bot?
Oh, my God.
Isn't that really funny?
It's amazing. It's just not, still people to this day think he's working at Ben's Breads.
So the first check Mike Clattenburg wrote for Rob Wells, who plays Ricky on Trailer Park Boys, in the re-line, he put sucking eight penises.
Oh, my God.
Crossed out the eight in red marker and put nine. As if on the way to the bank, Rob sucked one more. That is so funny.
Crosses it out a nine.
My house, this is a great story, actually. My house outside of Windsor, Nova Scotia, was broken into several years ago. And the whole house was just a carpet of my personal documents. Like, they were in there for a long time, and they took so much stuff that they left half in the shed because they were going to come back for it. It was brutal. So the earnest, short-haired, French-Canadian female Mountie, mounting the investigation, we already had kind of a language barrier thing, even though I speak French. She's rifling. I speak Franglais. She's rifling through like papers and stuff looking for clues, and she goes, Mr. Torrens, I think I found a clue. So I go out into the living room. She's holding a card that Rob and John Paul, the guys who play Ricky and Julian, and Mike Clattenburg had given me. On the cover, it says, we'd like to thank you. And you open it up, and it says, thank you for sucking our C's.
Oh, my God.
Drawings of those, drawings of my face.
Yes.
Drawings of ways that those two things were tied together.
Sure.
And I have to explain, it's from a group of my friends.
No, I believe me, I've been subject to the same stuff.
Mike Clattenburg would draw penises on Stick-It notes and put them behind every painting and under every pot in my house when I was in the bathroom, and you'd be finding them for months.
Just a cock on a little Stick-It note.
Yeah.
Or with veins and everything.
You'd go to use like Worcester sauce or something, and there's one in Sharpie written on the label when my mom comes for Christmas.
Yes.
Just a tiny one. What's that? I don't know.
He's got a problem with drawing cocks. Kids have gone to therapy for that.
My friend Matt Gallagher, who worked on Street
Sense, he got rich off it.
Big time. My friend Matt Gallagher, he was working on Street Sense. He was from Ontario. I started to do Jonovision in Toronto, so I was going back and forth every week doing both shows. And Matt gave me a box to carry up to Toronto for him. And he said, it's full of breakables, so you can't check it. You have to carry it on is the only thing. So it was too high to go through the x-ray machine. I had to turn it on its side. So as I was standing there being wanded by Wanda, the security lady, at the other end of the thing, the box slides out, and on the bottom, in thick black marker, he's written, nude photos of my parents, bracket, color, and black and white. Mel Gibson mattress warrior blow-up doll. The most incriminating list of contents
in this box. Are you kidding me?
And the woman says, is that your box? And all I can think is, well, if I say no or I didn't pack it myself, I look like an idiot. So all I can do is go.
Yeah, you're in trouble too.
Yeah. Brutal.
Wow, that's a big prank.
So what I did is, and I don't know if it ever paid off because we kind of lost touch, but I bought the most heinous magazines I could find, like Chicks and Horses and Seniors Monthly. And I hid them under the mattress in a hotel I was staying in with a note that said, these magazines are the property of Matt Gallagher, and if you find them, please call me because they're very important collector's items, with his phone number.
Oh, man.
Because I just like the idea of some, you know, chambermaid calling him and saying, are these yours? Well, what magazines? And hopefully she'd have to read the titles.
That's almost like the Andy Kim coffee cup.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Ticking time bomb, bud.
Wow. That's some crazy stuff.
There you go. Digging in
the vault. We really got off on a tangent there talking about Cox.
So the headline is, right on is what you say when people tell you good news.
Yes.
And it's time for a Street Sense reunion.
Yes, and I think we should do a Street Sense special on TNT in some regard. Yes.
You know what we should do is get the rights to the phone number 1-800-565-BEEF.
Nice.
So that or we could have our beef line.
We could have our own pit that things are fit for.
Do you know what I'd like to do? We should record a TNT when I'm in town to do the TSN dates. And we should find a way with, because our friend Tim from the Arkells will be back around. We should find a way to have a call in. Because it'd be fun to let the people as kind of a year-end thing call in and share their favorite moments from the year or whatever.
Oh, that would be absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. And I bet we'd have the technology in the same room to do that.
We might be able to. Let's try and get it happening.
All right, bud. Let's take a break and we'll be back to clean it up.
All right.
Don't you dare go anywhere. Hang on.
Where's my beer chair?
My wife, Carol, knows me to be a pretty laid back, pretty easygoing guy. It's almost become a running joke in our house that every year when it's time to put the tree up, I become a mess. And I know I've inherited this from my father, who is also a mess putting up the tree. He'd string together lights and words like profanities strung together in ways that people had never heard before. Got your tree up, bud?
I got my tree up, and I was very happy with it, with the kids.
A
we
real
all
one?
Got it up.
It's a real?
A real one.
Yep.
Yep. Super excited. It was really wide, a little bigger than I thought when I opened it.
Yeah. You know?
And it was a little bit of a leaner.
Oh,
which
no.
is questionable. So anyway, we put water in it and let it sit for the night, and then put the next day it was fine, and we put all the lights and the ornaments on it, and it's beautiful. I threw it up on the gram, and I got threw it up on the Twitter. Great picture. Tree looks dynamite.
Yeah.
I went out. I think it was the night actually after I saw DFA at the Sound Academy. It was about 3 o'clock in the morning, walked in the door, came in the house, and I just kind of went downstairs to the living room, and literally, it's not like I walked down, I was far, far away from the tree, but just as I made it to the bottom of the stairs, there's still about 30 feet of floor to it, and it's on a, it just doesn't make sense that this would happen at this time, because it was not the vibration of me stepping on the floor.
Right.
But the tree literally fell right in front of me, and it was so far away that I couldn't run and stop it, but it just smashed to the floor in front of me. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? At 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the morning?
Did it wake up the whole house?
Well, Lisa heard it and came downstairs, but we were up for an hour and a half, water all over the floor, and that, you know, balls, Christmas balls are broken, and cleaning up glass, and we're shattered up till like 4:30, and you know, got to get up at 7. So it was just like a ruined evening. But I thought that the tree was just done, and it wasn't gonna be. I thought Christmas was over. It was a terrible feeling. But then we actually got it up and cleaned it up, and it's okay now. Everything's fine. But we actually had to tie the thing just in case it were to happen again. But
God bless us, everyone.
Yeah, I need a new tree base. I need something that's just like made of steel or something, like full on iron.
Do you guys have pets? Was it like, was a cat sprinting over to you at the bottom of the stairs and it knocked it over, or it just the tree waited for you till you were home and then fell?
No pets, just waited. It waited for me. It was like, hey, bud.
Now that you're home,
I'm banged up. I'm a little too banged up, bud.
The tree got into the rum and eggnog while you were out.
Yeah, just shittered, fell right in front of me.
I mean, what's Christmas without one tree tumble?
Well, you know, yeah.
I don't take any chances anymore. My stand is rock solid. I drill it to the wall.
Really?
Yeah. Little baler twine, little monofilament. You can't mess around.
Wow. See, my dad once tried to get one up and it didn't work, and he ended up just like tossing it and smashing it around the room, like tearing up the presents on the ground and everything.
Aww.
Stepping on them. That was a good one.
Did I ever tell you the little drummer boy?
Yes.
Yeah, I did.
That's sad, too.
Think of it every holidays, bud. My animal from the Muppets drum set. Playing the little drummer boy, bud. In front of a group of adults.
Ah.
My first conscious memory of embarrassment, bud.
Just blowing it.
One is right now, asking if I'd ever told you that story before.
And you... Well, how could you not? That's a classic tale to a drummer.
Hey, bud. Oh, yeah, of course. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to work on our first ever TNT Holidays phone-in spectacular.
Yes.
We'll get a number going. The folks can call it. Think of your questions. Think of your memories from this year. And by gum, Jeremy, friend of mine, enjoy the holiday season, will you?
Oh, we'll be sharing a cup of joy before the New Year's.
Your mouth to God's ear, Jeremy. Your mouth to God's ear.
Talk to you soon, bud.
Take care, bud.